Hello, travelers, and welcome to Go See, Do, Explore.
Here, we dive deep into the heart of travel, sharing hidden gems, unforgettable experiences, and the stories that make each destination unique.
Whether you're a seasoned traveler or dreaming of your next getaway, you're in the right place to get inspired.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley.
And together, we'll set the course for your next great adventure and discover the stories that make each place unforgettable.
It's time to go, see, and do more. Let's explore.
Today, for our first podcast, we're starting with a somewhat controversial topic, and that is the case for ultra-low-cost airlines. We fly ultra-low-cost airlines, not always, but often, and we know many people that will never fly ultra-low-cost airlines. We tend to book Spirit or Frontier when we're booking in this category, but there's also Southwest, of course, and then JetBlue, which is maybe not ultra-low-cost, but is certainly not a legacy carrier. But we've had a lot of success flying on those airlines, and we don't think they're the greatest airlines on the earth or anything like that, but they can really be the right choice for your trip. And so we want to talk a little bit about why we make those choices.
Obviously, the first factor is the cost. If your choices are flying on an ultra-low-cost airline or not taking the trip at all, I'm going to take that low-cost ticket. For me, the ability to travel more often is worth it.
Right. And it could be, too, that maybe it's not that you can't take the trip, but if you could do something more on that trip with that money, if there's something you really want to do on that trip, and having the money available because you saved several hundred dollars on your airfare, I'll absolutely make that choice. You know, another one that comes up for us, we fly out of Detroit Metro. That's our primary airport. And Spirit is our number two carrier in Detroit. Delta is number one, and there's a Delta terminal here in Detroit. But Spirit is number two. And so a lot of times for us, Spirit has the best flights on a particular route out of Detroit. And I'm not going to pass up a really great route and choose a route with a bad connection just because it's Spirit Airlines. And so we'll take Spirit for that reason. And we know that we're not the only airport in the country that has an ultra low cost carrier with excellent routes. And so that's another reason why we will go in that direction.
But the one thing you need to kind of be aware of when you're talking about ultra low cost carriers is the price you see when you're doing your search most likely is not going to be your final out the door price. These airlines make their money by additional fees. So if you want to pick your seat, that's going to cost you extra. If you want a snack or a drink on the plane, that's going to cost you extra. If you're going to check a bag, I think this is pretty much the same on most airlines, unless you're buying a really high-end ticket, but you're going to pay extra to check a bag. And most low-cost airlines are also going to charge you to carry on a bag. So you need to do the math, see what you're going to be paying extra for and add it up and see how that compares to a similar flight on a legacy carrier.
Right. And the thing is, some people won't book because they don't like the pricing model. They just don't like the idea that, oh, it started so low, but look where it is now. The thing is, it's usually still cheaper, especially if you minimize the things that you need, if you can rely on a personal item for a trip or something like that. But no one likes the pricing model. We don't like the pricing model either. But at the end of the day, it still costs us less, so we'll deal with that. It's fine. You know, the other thing too, I think there's an assumption that the legacy carriers have always a better service or always a better pricing model. And it's really not true. And we've already mentioned Delta already is an exceptional domestic airline. But American Airlines, for example, who will happily fly, is often, for us, in our opinions, a comparable experience to some of these ultra-low-cost carriers. It just usually costs more. But they, you know, they charge for bags. You get a carry-on, too. They don't charge for a seat, per se, but you have to make sure you're at least main cabin, which is an upgrade from the basic economy. So it's really, if you think about it, not that different. And that's fine. We get no beef with American Airlines, but it's just, it's not different. So if the price is that much more, I'm going to choose an ultra low cost carrier in that situation if everything else is equal.
And we've learned that you can get a little bit better of an experience on an ultra low cost airline by doing little splurges or little upgrades. So paying $15 extra per ticket for a seat in the exit row where you're going to have a little more leg room. Or we've recently discovered the really nice big front seats on Spirit. That is a seat that is essentially the same as a first class seat. So it's got more padding, it's got more width, and it's just probably one of the most comfortable airline seats I've ever experienced, but it was on Spirit Airlines. I mean, don't get me wrong, you're not getting the rest of the first class experience. They're not bringing you a hot towel. They're still refusing to land the plane until you sign up for their credit card because it's Spirit Airlines.
Right, but American does that too. They sell their credit cards, and they also don't give away 1,000 Spirit points before you land like Spirit does.
Who's got the lucky seat today?
Yeah, I want to be in that lucky seat, I think. So we have more to talk about. We're going to talk about the situations where we don't choose ultra low cost airlines. But before we do that, we'll be taking our wine break. Okay, it's time for the wine break. What is a wine break? Well, when we travel, a lot of times we travel with wine destinations in mind. We're both wine fans. We have a fair amount of it here at home. And we like to go to wine destinations. And so each podcast, we're going to feature a wine that we're drinking, hopefully from our travels. I can't guarantee that it's always going to be from our travels, but that's the goal anyway.
Just wait for the Kirkland Malbec episode.
Yeah, Kirkland is happening. Kirkland Malbec is a staple around here for sure. But today we have something a little bit more special than that. We have Quinta do Jaloto. I think that's how you say it. It's Portuguese. It's from Portugal. It's from the Douro. This is a red. It's made, I believe, with the same sort of field blend that port is made from. The Douro is where port is cultivated and made. And we picked up two bottles of this past summer when we were in Portugal, when we went to the Douro. It was incredible. This is a 2012. So here we are in the year 2024. This is a pretty old wine, and it holds up great. We bought two bottles of this. I think we were the only people on the tour that enjoyed it because it tastes like an aged wine. It has really that taste of age, which is not a taste that everyone enjoys, but it's pretty special. We bought it because we got married in 2012, so it's kind of an anniversary wine for us. Shipped at home, but it's really incredible. This Quinta do Jaloto is near Pinhal. You can get there from Pinhal. You have to go up the big hill. But it's this beautiful view of the Douro, the most expensive wine-growing region in the world, just absolutely incredible. And their property there is completely surrounded by Symington properties. If you don't know Symington's, they're a big port family. They own many, many brands that you would know. And it's just this little Portuguese wine grower there making primarily table wines in the middle of this big commercial operation. And it's really incredible. They make great wine. And it's one of our favorite stops on that trip. So tonight we are having one of our two bottles of this 2012 Quinta do Jaloto. And it's really great.
We might need to add the picture that I took from the winery to the show notes.
I think we can do that. Or you can find the post on our blog, which we can link. Okay, now that we have our wine, let's talk about a couple reasons why we think that ultra low cost airlines are not the right choice for us, because they're not always the right choice.
So the one of the biggest reasons is that sometimes you're searching for flights and the legacy carriers are cheaper, or they have a direct flight where Spirit or Frontier are going to be connecting us somewhere crazy. I do not want to fly San Francisco to Detroit with a connection in New Jersey.
No?
No. Not exactly practical.
Right. Another reason is sometimes your objective is not the lowest cost, right? We know that not every trip you're taking, certainly not every trip we're taking, is the primary objective here. Let's just fly as cheaply as possible. And so if you really love an experience on a particular airline and you want to do that and you want to make that part of your vacation, like, yeah, of course, choose that. That's fine. And you're going to pay for that, but that's what you're doing, right? Your objective is more than just getting from A to B as cheaply as possible. And that's totally respectable. Sometimes we're in the same boat as that, too.
And then something else to be aware of, that a lot of times these ultra low cost carriers have fewer protections around delays and cancellations when you compare it to the legacy carriers. We're going to post a link in the show notes to the U.S. Department of Transportation link for passenger rights. But just know what the airline is going to give you in the event of a delay or cancellation. So a few years ago, we were on a Spirit flight. It was actually January 2021. So kind of, you know, still the middle of COVID when all of that was going on. And they closed the Jacksonville air traffic control to sanitize because there was a positive COVID case. So it shut down all the flights essentially on the Eastern Seaboard, I think. It definitely affected Florida for sure. And so we got stranded in Florida for several days until we could get another Spirit flight. So other airlines, some of the legacy carriers, would put you on another airline to get you home. Although in this case, I don't know if that was possible because I think all of the flights were canceled. But just be aware of what you're getting with your ultra low cost airline ticket. And one thing that we have done ever since this incident was that if we are traveling, especially if we are traveling on a low cost carrier and one of us might miss work, we have travel insurance that covers missed work because of trip delay or cancellation.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, if you can call it funny, about that situation was that Spirit claimed that the cancellation was due to weather, and so they didn't owe us any compensation. That's just what you're getting. I mean, I think we paid less than $200 total for that flight, for the whole, not just that flight, but the round trip. It was very inexpensive, right? So you know that you're taking more risk, and if you can't take that risk, then that's not the right choice. But travel insurance, like Ashley said, can help, certainly. So that's a look at why we sometimes choose ultra low cost airlines and why we think that you should consider it. You shouldn't dismiss them. Please don't quit on the podcast just because we said it's okay to fly these folks. It really is, though. I hope that you can continue to rely on us for these kinds of wonderful opinions and information.
Oh, don't get me wrong. You know, we just the other day booked a Frontier flight and it was done with a resignated?
I guess we're flying.
With a sigh. I guess we're flying Frontier. I guess what I'm trying to say is it might not be our favorite thing, but it's being able to travel more is worth it to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And we definitely are all about traveling as much as we can. So these things help. Okay, we're moving on. This episode, we're going to feature a destination, somewhere we've been thinking about lately, somewhere we've been before. And so this week, we are going to talk about New Orleans.
New Orleans is more than just Bourbon Street and all that goes along with it. So we visited New Orleans as actually an embarkation port for a cruise to the Western Caribbean several years ago. And we didn't have a lot of time there, as is often the case when you're cruising. And it's a place that has been coming back to me, and I feel like we need more time to dive in there. So New Orleans has the French Quarter, which is the oldest part of the city, and that's the part of the city with the wrought iron balconies. Like when you think of New Orleans, That's the French Quarter. But they also have the Garden District, which is a little newer.
A little newer, but still very old.
But still very old. So the Garden District is the region of New Orleans that was settled by the English. And it is home to probably one of the most famous restaurants in the world, which is Commander's Palace. Because of the shortened time that we were there, we did not get to try Commander's Palace. So it's one of the reasons why New Orleans is still on our list as a place to return to.
When I think of New Orleans food, one of the things, of course, I think of beignets and Café du Monde, which I think I still have some powdered sugar on me from the last time we were there a few years ago.
Yeah, it's a rookie move to wear a black shirt for beignets. But we did discover a little trick the last time we were there. So the original Café du Monde is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and can get quite a big line in the middle of the day. So we kind of discovered by accident the River Place Mall has a Café du Monde, and we got off the cruise ship right as it was opening. And so there were maybe two or three people ahead of us, and we got covered in powdered sugar, and it was, I think it was pretty good, but obviously.
It was fine.
We didn't want to eat for the rest of the day. So
that's
I don't see what's wrong with this. And Café du Monde and New Orleans in general are also known for coffee with chicory in it, which is different than traditional coffee that you'll find other places.
Yeah, they have the Café au lait with the coffee and the milk and the chicory, very famous thing. I would really like to go back to New Orleans and do Jazz Fest. It might be a little bit people-y for you.
Yeah, crowds kind of aren't my thing, which is kind of surprising that New Orleans is a place that I want to go back to. But I feel like there are most places, I wouldn't go at Mardi Gras. Oh, no.
Not our thing.
I'm sure other people love it, but no.
They certainly do. That's why they're all there. Yeah.
But we did even get to see, what was it, St. Joseph's Day? We did get to see a little parade when we were there.
Yeah, that was a pretty big parade, actually. And then we saw, of course, the little kind of very small parades that happened seemingly spontaneously in the French Quarter. That was really great. I love live music, a big fan of live music, and I've been trying to seek it out more lately. And so that's one thing that's drawing me back to New Orleans.
And New Orleans is also home to the National World War II Museum. So if you're in for a day of learning in history, and especially about World War II, that is the place to do it.
Yeah, we haven't done that one yet. And so that's, again, so many reasons to go back. So just like with all sorts of other destinations that we'll feature that we want to go back to, it's just a question of when. When can we get back there? I don't know.
It's always a struggle between wanting to see the places that we haven't seen and wanting to go back, have those amazing experiences again, and dig deeper on a return trip.
Yeah. So that's just a taste of New Orleans, just a little feature. That certainly could be a whole episode someday, that city. But if you've been there, I hope that you felt a little bit with us of that nostalgia to go back. And if you haven't, it's a great place. You should definitely visit. Definitely the most distinct, in my opinion, of all American cities. It is a one-of-a-kind place. All right, we also have a travel tip for you. So I do a lot of flight searching, so does Ashley, but I'm a real nut about it. I go crazy using all sorts of different tools. You know, one thing, if you're not using various meta search tools for flights in 2024, you should start. It is so much easier than going to the airline websites and having to look through every single one. So there are tons of these. The ones I tend to use, I use three for the most part. I use Kayak, I use Skyscanner, and I use Google Flights. They each have their strengths and weaknesses. I really like Google Flights for the power of the search. You can set multiple source airports, multiple destination airports. You have a wide date range. You can then look at calendars of fares. It's really great, in my opinion, if you're trying to cast a wide net. I don't believe that Google Flights always finds the best deals, but it's really helpful to narrow down when you can go. Kayak and Skyscanner are pretty similar.
I really like Kayak has a feature they call Explore. So if you have certain dates that you're looking at, you can type in your departure airport and just see flight prices to wherever. So, you know, if you're looking for Memorial Day, we know that a holiday weekend is going to be more expensive. Where can you go within your budget? That's a great tool. That can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have to say, it can be nice for inspiration, but I don't like that tool that much. And the reason why is because it just always tells me I can go to Atlanta for $80. Like, it doesn't change that much.
I don't know. Minneapolis has some good deals sometimes, too.
That's another one that always comes up from Metro is Minneapolis. So, like, no, it's great. And if you don't fly that much and you're just kind of looking for something, I don't mean to dismiss the tool, but I think it's not sophisticated enough for the kind of searching that I do. I'll put it that way. So, Kayak and Skyscanner, though, pretty much the same. I use both of them in case one of them misses something, pretty much. I use them in the exact same fashion, just kind of to zero in a little bit. Both of them have the abilities to watch certain parameters and notify you if prices go up or down, things like that. So I use both of those. Now, here's the thing, though, and we both believe in this. We always book through the airline. We never book through these tools or tools like Expedia or Travelocity or any of those. And the reason why is because when you book an airline ticket through a third party, that third party is your travel agent. And if you encounter any issues with your flights, you must go through them. And in those situations where you have a last minute cancellation, that's the last thing you want to do. The airlines, if you can deal with the airlines directly, it's so much better. And it's pretty rare, in my opinion, that those third parties offer a deal that is significantly better than what you can get from the airlines. Now, there are some out there that will. They have pretty shady reputations, and I would not book with them no matter what. But by and large, it just doesn't make sense. You want to use those tools to find the flights and then book with the airline. Now, here's another thing, and we will have for sure a whole episode on how to think about flight planning, but just a couple more little tips. Use a VPN. Turn your VPN off, turn it on. If you're looking for international flights, set your VPN to the country that you're flying to, or set your VPN, like if you're flying to Europe, set it to another country in the EU or something like that. Try different things to see if you get prices to go down. There's been a flight we've been watching for a long time that had this incredible first class deal. We didn't end up booking it, but it was this incredible first class deal. Only showed up when we were on VPN. So it really does make a difference sometimes. Sometimes it'll be exactly the same, but it's good to check.
Apparently, the algorithm thinks that our IP address will pay more for flights.
Yeah, you start booking Comfort Plus a couple times and forget it. But those are just some basic tips in terms of searching for flights. We'll cover that. It's a passion of mine. We'll cover it in much greater detail another time, the things that we like to do. And in the meantime, if you have any tips that you like, you let us know. That's all for today's episode of Go See, Do, Explore. Thank you for joining us and sharing in the wonder of travel.
Keep the spirit of today's adventure alive by checking out our blog at goseedoexplore.com for even more travel inspiration.
Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps fellow travelers find us and join our community.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep dreaming, and keep traveling by any means necessary.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley, bidding you farewell and happy exploring.